This episode is brought to you by Tranquil Path Financial Planning. Britta Kepf is a dedicated special needs financial planner at Tranquil Path Financial Planning. Britta's personalized approach in fee-only planning ensures unbiased, tailored advice. Britta specializes in retirement planning and addressing the unique financial challenges of families with special needs kids anywhere in the United States. Navigating government benefits and long-term needs planning can be overwhelming and stressful, but with Britta's guidance, families find clarity and peace of mind. Secure your family's future with a compassionate and knowledgeable partner. Contact Britta Kepf at Tranquil Path Financial Planning for personalized financial planning that meets your family's unique needs. For more information or to contact Britta, visit tranquilfp.com. That's TranquilFP.com. Welcome to the Autism Dad Podcast. I'm Rob Gorski. As a single dad to three amazing autistic kids, I've been the go-to global resource for autism parenting since 2010. For the past seven seasons, this podcast has provided parents with education, connection, resources, validation, and hope. This season, you'll hear from parents just like you, as well as my own kids, who will offer their unique perspective on what it's like for them to navigate the world as young autistic people. I'll feature experts from across various relevant fields, from parenting and education to therapies, nutrition, self-care, and more. So join us each week and connect with people who get it. You can subscribe on any one of your favorite podcast listening apps. And for more information, to be a guest, or learn about sponsorship opportunities, please visit theautismdad.link. So we're back.
What was that?
That was a blooper.
Need to keep that.
We'll keep it.
Yeah, we should keep that.
So we're back. And this week I'm sitting down with Emmett, my 15-year-old autistic son. And
hello.
There you go. He said hi. We're going to do kind of a Q&A episode today. Emmett went through Facebook and pulled a bunch of your questions that you guys had asked and made a nice little, very organized list. And we're going to kind of go through them one by one, answer them the best we can, give you our, you know, kind of unique perspectives on things and go from there. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. Do you want to go first?
It doesn't matter what question I ask.
Why don't we start at the top and work our way down? Because otherwise we're going to just not get through any of this.
Can someone outgrow autism?
Do you want to answer that? Do you want me to?
Figuring you could answer that since I'm asking you the question.
Okay. No, you do not grow out. Wait.
Grow out?
No, you don't outgrow autism.
There you go.
I knew it was in there somewhere. I think what sometimes maybe confuses people is, well, A, sometimes people just don't know. But other times I think that as kids get older, they learn to sort of better navigate the world and you know, they build skills that help them to either overcome or better manage some of the challenges in their lives. So what do you think?
So you're essentially saying they don't outgrow it, they adapt to it.
Yeah. You learn to live with what you got.
Awesome.
And so it's easier, like it may on the surface look like it's easier than what it was before, but they're just as autistic today as they were when they were born. So yeah. Good question. Okay. So I'm just going to word this one a little bit differently than the way that it was written because I think it's a little bit odd. Can dietary changes make autistic symptoms less pronounced?
I guess it depends on what the symptoms are. Because if you have a kid that is like nonverbal and they are aggressive, sort of like I used to be, then if they have a stomach ache or their leg hurts or their head hurts and they can't like say something about that, they can get aggressive about that or just something that has to do with gut health. I don't know why I said leg and face, but if their stomach hurts and you give them a proper diet and then their stomach doesn't hurt anymore, it's going to seem like that their symptoms went away, but in all actuality, it's just their stomach doesn't hurt anymore. Sure. So it's not getting rid of the symptoms, it's getting rid of the cause of a problem.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So when it comes to things like this, I think that like anybody else, autistic people, kids, whatever, can have food sensitivities. Right? Maybe they have an intolerance to like lactose, like you. I have kids in my family right now sitting in this room who insist on eating dairy products when we all know that that's not something he should be doing, and yet he does it anyways.
If you ask anyone that has a lactose intolerance, I will guarantee you will not find one person that avoids it.
Oh, yeah, they do. I'm sure they do. Some people
do. Ice cream is just too good to avoid.
But the point is there's a lot of comorbid things that can go along with an autism diagnosis, right? And some of them are manageable. And if it happens to be a gut-related thing or a food sensitivity, and you correct that food sensitivity, then you're alleviating a problem. And so maybe they're happier or less stressed, or there's fewer outbursts or less aggression. So yes. So yes and no, right?
Yeah.
Yes and no. There you go.
Just depends.
It just depends.
Sort of, I guess.
There's a definitive answer.
Yeah.
Okay, so, oh no, it's your turn.
Yeah. Why have more people been diagnosed than, say, 1990?
Oh, like, why are more people getting diagnosed today? You know, I don't know that we actually know that. I think, you know, there's a couple of different schools of thought. So I think one is that people, like, we're more aware, so more people are being evaluated, right? Like, it's
yeah.
I mean, it's impossible to get in, and there's wait lists and stuff like that, but... You know, if you suspect something, you can go to the doctor, and people are more aware, so they know what symptoms to look for and stuff like that. And I think there's another school of thought that is, you know, if autism is caused by something environmental or, you know, whatever, that it's just more prominent now. But I think the reality is that we're just more aware of it. And yeah. So more people are being diagnosed because more people are being evaluated, I think. But,
yeah.
You know, what do I know? What do you think?
Pretty much the same thing. I mean, it goes with pretty much every major diagnosis. I mean, we're going to have more diagnoses of, say, depression than we did in 1990 because more people are getting help and more people, like, have the resources to do it because even in, like, early 2000s, there wasn't really many... resources for
well, there was, but it wasn't really in the 2000s. I was treated for depression in the 2000s.
I wasn't talking about depression, I was talking about autism.
Oh, well, I mean, it was, but you know, we have like the advent of social media, right? And so, you know, people are talking about it. There's, you know, people talk about symptoms online all the time, and you could be like, oh my gosh, my kid does this. And you get that thought planted in your head and you go see your pediatrician and you get the evaluation and bam, you have a diagnosis.
You want to know what it's like?
What is it like?
It's like how it seems like there was less crime in the 80s and 90s. But the only reason it seems like that was because there was no social media and ways to communicate with each other. Does that make sense?
In real time.
Yeah.
Like yeah. Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Awesome. I mean, like, you guys are just asking for our opinions. I mean, this you don't, like, tank this to the bank or anything. But, like, I mean, I think it's a combination of things. I think more people are being evaluated because there's just a greater awareness. You know, we're teachers are more aware, so they can point things out. Pediatricians are more aware, so they're looking for things. Parents are more aware. There's TV shows and movies and, you know, organizations that are advocating. I mean, it's everywhere now. So when you're more aware... you're paying more attention. You get help when you think you need it or your kid needs it. So somebody asked, aren't we all a little autistic? We're just going to humor them with this one because I know a lot of people get offended by this question. No, we're not all just a little autistic. I mean, I think, I don't know why people say that. Maybe they just don't know what to say, you know, but I mean, maybe somebody means it, you know, in a negative way at times. Yeah. And maybe sometimes people just don't know what to say. So yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of think. So like, do you have a thought or?
Not really. Just, I agree with what you said.
All right.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So if you hear that and you get offended by it, like I get why you would be offended because maybe you feel invalidated or like you're being downplayed or whatever, but you know, sometimes people say things because they just don't know what else to say. And maybe they want you not to feel so different or like whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never had somebody say that to me. Like,
you're not autistic though.
No, I know. I know that. But like, if you guys, if I was like, oh yeah, you know, my son is autistic. I'm like, oh, aren't we all just a little autistic? I'd be like, well, no, we're not. Just, I mean, you either are or you aren't. It's like being pregnant or not pregnant. Like you either are or you aren't. There's no
little pregnant.
Yeah. You are or you aren't. So you either are autistic or you're not autistic. You either have ADHD or you don't have ADHD. I mean, it's just sort of like, maybe there's traits that people maybe see that might be common between, you know, humans, but I don't know. I don't tend to get all like worked up about that stuff. So like, I really don't have an opinion one way or the other, but anyhow, you want to do the next one? Or you want me to do it?
I mean, I don't know how to answer it, so I'm going to ask you.
Sure.
A pediatrician had asked what they should tell the parents of their patients at the time of diagnosis.
Okay, so, you know, that's a good question. And it's nice to hear, like, somebody ask that, because I think there is a problem with the way that we do this. So, like, when you guys were diagnosed, and what I hear from parents pretty much anywhere, is you get the diagnosis, and then you get like a piece of paper, a little pamphlet or something, and you're kind of shoved out the door and told to be on your way. And, you know, in those first moments when your kid is diagnosed, like, parents are like, their whole world implodes because they're not processing everything. And it's like, they're emotionally vulnerable and they don't know what to do. They don't have, you know, someone to talk to oftentimes. They don't have a support system. All they know is that there's a list of phone numbers, like, you know, OTPT, speech, whatever, on a piece of paper, and that's what they have to go on. And I think what we should be doing is letting parents know that, you know, yes, it's a diagnosis, and yes, your child may be struggling with this, 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 and this right now, but we need to label it so that we can identify a need and match it with a resource, right? Mm-hmm. And just because your child isn't speaking right now, or just because they are struggling with this, this, or this, does not mean they're always going to be struggling with this, this, and this. Where we are today is like a baseline. We're establishing like ground zero so that we can build up and measure progress going forward. So a lot of times parents walk out of these diagnoses feeling like this is what their life is going to be for the rest of their lives. Like, their child is never going to progress. This is what it's going to be like. And that's almost never the case. Kids always make progress, you know, big, small, whatever. And I think we need to make sure the parents know that, so that they're not hopeless, you know, walking out the door. We get them set up with resources and parent mentors and other people who have gone through this before to help them manage the emotional side of this stuff. So that's what I think.
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay, so how do you explain to non-autistic siblings about their, like, how do you explain autism to a non-autistic sibling? So, like, you know, let's say you have, like, three kids, and one of those kids is autistic. How do you explain autism to their, I don't know, brother and sister?
One sec, Ellie, it's bothering me. what was the question again?
Are you kidding me?
Okay. No, we're not gonna cut this out. This is funny.
No, it's real funny. So let's just say, how do you explain autism to siblings?
I mean, I guess it depends on how old the sibling is.
Okay.
Because he's bothering me again.
Ignore it.
Okay, fine. I mean, you're going to describe it differently for different age groups. Mm-hmm. So let's just assume that, I don't know, 10 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
You would probably say something like, I don't know, you've said this spiel of we think differently and act differently in certain aspects and deal with things differently and are sensitive to different things and have different traits that other people don't. And stuff like that.
Hmm?
I guess I can't really go into specifics because I don't know what those specifics would be for any given person.
And you like to be very specific and know all the facts. So you're not going to, like,
Absolutely.
Try and extrapolate anything from that beyond what you know to be definite, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I would agree with what Emmett said. And just to build on that a little bit, like, we just talked to the boys, even explaining autism to each of the kids who are autistic in my house, because each of them are different from each other, and trying to explain some of those differences and why they do things a certain way or whatever. And it's just like, you know, everybody's brain works different. Everybody does things differently. And, you know, that's okay. We just have to, you know, work with it. And you just do it in a non-threatening way, like just a very matter of fact, and in a positive, you know, way, and, you know, validate frustrations and things like that. And maybe get a therapist. They're great at helping you navigate stuff like this. We have a Patty. Patty has been there for us for 20 years navigating this stuff. So we have a Patty. You should get yourself a Patty. Good therapist.
Elliot interrupted us for.
Why?
He has sent me a link to a chocolate souffle Castella cake.
This episode is brought to you by Goalie. Did you know the University of Michigan did a study that found over 80% of apps for kids are designed to lure them into longer gameplay and more in-app purchases? Goalie decided it was time for this to end. Unlike the Kindle and iPad that have endless ads and potentially dangerous content, Goalie is a tablet with only apps that build independent kids. It has no web browser, no social media, and no ads, ever. It has award-winning learning apps like Khan Academy, Duolingo ABC, and Starfall, and the best part? It's completely parent-controlled. In my house, we use Goalie's kids calendar to teach my son how to stay on task. He learns life skills like how to make a sandwich by watching one of the hundreds of video classes, and can practice it by following along with one of the 50 pre-made routines. As a dad, there's no better feeling than knowing that my son is becoming more independent every day. For more information and to try Goalie risk-free for 30 days, visit getgoalie.com. That's GETGOALLY.com, and use the code theautismdad to save 10%. Oh my God. Okay. Next question, Emmett.
Okay. I just went back to Elliot's.
This one was really important to you.
Oh.
So do you want to answer it, or do you want me to ask it?
I don't know how to answer it.
Okay. So do you want to ask the question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Before I say this question, first off, I would probably say that this took like a lot of guts to say, but this person had asked, how can I feel happy about my 20-year-old son and think he's amazing when every day is terrible?
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
And we debated about whether or not to take this one on, but you specifically felt very, you felt it was very important that we honor
at least address it.
Yeah, because it took a lot of courage to ask that. And there is zero judgment at all. And I guess without knowing any more than that, what I can say is that you're very human. And I think that a lot of times this journey can be so hard and so exhausting, and we don't have the support that we need. And, you know, sometimes the challenges that our kids have are such that it takes more than what we have. And it's easy to become more familiar with the bad days and sort of get sucked into that despair and feel like you're drowning. You know, I think that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to be overwhelmed. It's okay to be miserable for a period of time. But, you know, you want to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. You want to make sure that you're getting the support that you need as a parent so that you are able to be the best version of yourself for your son. And I know that when you're asking this question, it's not meant in malice or anything like that, because there are times that, and I've told my kids this, like, my kids drive me nuts. They drive me crazy.
How dare you? I am perfect.
perfectly good at driving me crazy.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah, and there have been times where I felt similar to this with some of my kids during like really difficult times. And it's just, it's a lot for anybody to try and deal with, especially if you don't have that support or the resources to help you navigate some of these things. So, you know, I guess I wouldn't focus so much on how you're supposed to feel happy. I would focus on figuring out where you can find support.
And
therapy would, yeah. Again, therapy is huge. It's so important. Respite care, so important.
What I would say is, especially therapy, again, as you said, because there's going to be a great deal of guilt for even having that thought that you can't think of anything like happy about your son because of how like bad the days are. And so therapy could help you sort of move like
through it.
Yeah, move through it, or at least a little further. But again, we don't know the situation, specifics, and
we don't judge,
and we can't make any giant judgment calls without knowing what is happening, because there's a multitude of situations that could be going on. And so we're just choosing this as a sort of overall thing you can do to help yourself and try and move forward.
And I think that was well said, Emmett. And I just want to say too that this doesn't make you a bad parent. It doesn't mean your kid is a bad kid. It means that you're in over your head. And
almost nothing makes you mad.
I don't get mad.
I've tried, and I can't make him mad. Over 15 years, I have tried.
Yeah, I don't get angry.
And so this isn't anything easily against anyone, like anywhere.
Yeah.
My dad is just weird.
Yeah, we can go with weird. But what I wanted to just say this, you know, like all joking aside, if you're out there listening to this and you're thinking like, who would say something about that to their kid? A lot of people. There's a lot of people out there who feel exactly like this. And we need to be very, very careful when we judge other parents, because autism is a very broad spectrum. And, you know, while there are significant challenges in my life with my kids, I'm very fortunate.
Yeah.
They're amazing. And as they've gotten older, a lot of those challenges have gotten easier, but they're all diagnosed with autism. And then there are families who are raising kids who are very high needs, who maybe are non-speaking, who can't feed themselves, who can't use the bathroom, who can't do anything without 24-hour a day, seven-day a week.
Aggressive through all of that.
Yeah. And they're diagnosed with the same thing, autism. And we need to be aware that it's not, what you're experiencing in your life does not reflect what someone else might be experiencing, even though their kids have the same diagnosis. It's what makes this whole thing so difficult to navigate. So I applaud the question, because I think it took a tremendous amount of courage. I think there's a lot of people out there who are going to hear that and feel like, I'm not alone, because you are not alone. You're not alone.
Because not only is this addressing a question that you would ask, it's addressing questions that people who felt either too guilty or too scared to ask that, because no one would want to. No one wants to feel like, what would you call it? Not hatred, but... No,
well, you feel guilt because, you know, as a parent, you're supposed to, like, love unconditionally, which, I mean, we do, but we all have limits, right? We're not superhuman. Yeah. There's this nonsense that goes around where we talk about, like, you know, autism warrior parents or whatever. And the reality is that there's no different, like, I'm no different than anyone else. Like, I have a different personality or whatever, but I'm just as human as anybody else. And, you know, I struggle with things. I find ways to deal with it. I don't have, you know, a superhuman ability to do things that make this life easier for me. And so I run out of patience. I run out of bandwidth. I run out of resources. I burn out. I get depressed. I get anxious. My mental health can, you know, suffer at times. My physical health can suffer at times. And it has over the years. You know, so beating yourself up because you're human just doesn't, it's flawed logic. You're never going to be perfect, and that's okay. You're not supposed to be perfect.
Yeah.
You're doing the best you can with a job that often requires superhuman abilities, and none of us are superhuman, you know? So thank you. And if you happen to be listening and you're the one that asked this question, you can reach out and, you know, we can maybe chat or something if that would be helpful, but you're not alone. And, you know, I see you, we both see you. And I think a lot of the people out here listening right now can relate. And, thank you for having the courage to ask that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you picked that out, actually. That was an important question.
Yeah.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we, there were two more questions in here that I think we can refer back to previous episodes
or future
episodes. Yes, correct. So there was one that was asking about, when to have like the sex talk with,
just call it the birds and bees.
Well, is that what they called it? I think they called it the birds.
Yeah,
and bees.
It's called the birds and the bees.
So, I mean, whatever. We can just.
It's the more childish way of saying it. I know we're both adults here.
We're not both adults. But. All right. So we'll say you're more comfortable with the birds and the bees.
Huh?
You more comfortable with birds and bees?
No, but if you're like, oh, kids might be watching this, you don't just want to say the sex talk. I mean.
Why not?
I don't know. It just feels
we use the right words
awkward.
For things. Well, okay. So the question was, at what point do I talk about the birds and the bees? Does
Thank
that feel better?
You.
You're welcome. to my autistic, 10-year-old or something? 10-year-old son?
11.
11-year-old
Almost
son.
11.
Almost 11-year-old son. You know, I did a whole episode on this with Dr. Whitney Caceres. It's the Parent's Guide to Navigating Autism and Puberty. I will have it linked in the show notes below. You can also go to the autismdad.link, click on the podcast button and scroll down a little bit and you'll find it's pinned on there. So you can check that out. We went in depth about all of that stuff, and she's an autism mom as well as a pediatrician, and it was an amazing episode. I was super uncomfortable, but I got through it. It was really awkward for me at first, but it turned out really well. It has helped a lot of people. So you can check that one out. And then what was the last one?
Can I ask this one?
Yeah, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So someone had talked about the fact that Elliot hates the dentist.
Yes,
and I mean, Elliot despises it. He hates it more than socks and sandals. I mean, it's just the worst thing in the world to him. And so
almost more than microfiber.
Yeah. This
well, it's probably more than microfiber. He hates
microfiber. This person had asked, how do we get him to the dentist successfully? And apparently, my dad recorded an episode about that. And when's it gonna air?
It soon.
Soon. Sometime soon. Not a specific date. But general time span. but honestly, the real answer, and it's not gonna work for everybody because I guarantee it won't. But we just don't tell him. We tell him we're going out for ice cream or going to Best Buy.
No, we don't. You can't do that.
And when he asks, why does this?
Oh my God, what? You're having way too much fun with this. This is like an ongoing family kind of inside joke thing. Like Elliot struggles with anxiety, and the dentist, and I can relate to that because I was traumatized as a kid in a dentist, an oral surgery thing. And I get it for me. So I'm very sensitive to this more so than some of us, but you know, I think it just depends. And Emma's right. Like I did record an episode with the pediatric dentist at Akron Children's Hospital. And we talked about ways to help our kids navigate some of these things. And there's a bunch of new things that they're doing with sedation and drill-less cavity things and stuff like that. So that will air shortly. And then you'll be able to find that as well at theautismdad.link, click on podcast, and you'll find it pinned in the thing there. Okay, Elliot. Okay, we're recording.
We're recording.
And you're talking about me behind my back.
It's a Q&A.
About me.
Okay, no, it's not.
It's a singular question.
It was somebody had watched your reel, and they said that they knew that you were terrified of the dentist, and how do we get you to go?
I had joked about the fact that you hate the dentist more than socks and sandals, and we would just say, hey, Elliot, you want to go to Best Buy? And I was about to say before I burst out laughing, and when Elliot asks, why does this Best Buy look like a dentist office? And we just say, oh, it's a mall complex. It's in the back.
Yeah, no, you don't ever want to lie to your kids if you can avoid it, obviously, because like if we said and I never did that. I would never lie to you about that. You would be told, but you might not be told until like the last minute. Yeah, so you had less time to perseverate on it. But, you know, if you lie to your kids, then you know, especially autistic kids, like they will latch onto that and they will sometimes never let it go. And if you tell them we're going to go get ice cream, but you take them to the dentist, then they're never going to trust you. Like our kids
want to hear ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, our kids can latch onto things. So, you know, the episode will come out and there's a lot of ways that you can work with your kids on this. And then you can work with a therapist, you know, that can, you know, help with social stories and things like that. But, you know, we kind of joked around about this and then Elliot popped his head in. But yeah, so, I mean, it was a good question. And, you know, I'll let you guys know when the episode drops. But there's a lot of stuff that I learned that I wasn't aware of that we can do. And so now Elliot is going to be doing sedation dentistry. So, you know, he'll go and he'll go to sleep and he'll wake up and it'll all be done. And he won't be afraid of the dentist anymore. So,
and my answer was obviously exaggerated. Don't do that to your kids, please. I was just trying to make a joke and it was funny. And
so you're capable of doing that sometimes. Why can't you do that more often?
What?
Like you were able to kind of like riff on that and kind of like have fun with it.
Because it's funny.
Well, but it wasn't factual.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, anyhow, you know, next time we're going to have to just get all three of us like hooked up on this and do it all at one time. All right. On that note, thank you guys very much for taking the time to tune in. Emmett, thank you for putting this together and finding these questions.
No problem.
I appreciate it. Keep your questions coming in. There's a thread pinned on my Facebook page where you can submit your questions and, you know, everything else can be found at theautismdad.link. You can email me or look up past episodes or check out the marketplace with all the discount codes and cool stuff like that. So thank you very much, guys. Have a great rest of your week.
Have a great day. Bye.
Before we go, I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you so much for taking the time to tune in and for all the support you guys have shown me over the last 7 seasons. I am so grateful and appreciative of each and every one of you. If you have found this useful or you just enjoyed listening, if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you're listening to this on, or share it with your friends or whatever, it's a great way to support the show. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You guys can reach me at theautismdad.link. That's theautismdad.link. And we'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye.